Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 30th day of March 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Man. Busy, what's these weekends? Weekends and weekdays, it's tough to tell the difference, but it is still isolation day 13 or 14 or whatever it is, or 10, or I don't even know which way is up. It's isolation. And actually, I kind of like the isolation, to be perfectly honest with you, because there's not people bugging me, at least to do stuff. People are bugging me in other ways, but you guys aren't bugging me. You can bug me all you want. Email at derek@dailycaller.com. I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm talking about people who want me to go and do things. Oh, will you come and give a speech? All those speeches are done. The local parties here in Maryland, the Republican Party. Oh, you want to come to this thing? Could you come to this thing? I hate public speaking. I really just despise public speaking. But hey, what are you going to do? That's just how it is. I know, you're sitting there, you go, you talk for a living. Oh, I can talk. I can do a public speech. I just hate it. I hate being up in front of crowds. This is different. This is me sitting in front of one of the 12-inch iPad or whatever the hell the iPad Pro big one is. First model. I haven't upgraded. A desktop computer and a laptop computer and an iPhone. I'm surrounded by Apple products. My Apple Watch is right there on the charger. The whole damn thing. My whole life is Apple. But that's different because there's nobody sitting here staring at you. Anyway, we've got an interview today as we're doing. I'm trying to do one every day with somebody in the news or somebody who can somewhere in the news, somebody who is somewhere in the news. And today we got a good one. We've got the Attorney General of the state of Louisiana. Yes, that's right. Attorney General Jeff Landry. New Orleans is expecting a crush of coronavirus cases in the very near future. So we check in on how Louisiana is doing and how the failed leadership in Louisiana, particularly in New Orleans, is leading to what is expected to be the next big hot spot in the United States. The mayor of Louisiana or of New Orleans and the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, is the mayor, by the way, her name is Latoya Cantrell. They've both gone on national television, and you can tell that they are. It's weird watching the ball be set on a tee for these people by supposed journalists, asking whether or not they made a mistake by not canceling Mardi Gras. Well, we didn't get any guidance from Washington, D.C. about it. We didn't know it was wrong. How the hell did you not know it was wrong? Mardi Gras was at the end of February. This was going on. They didn't even really issue any warnings. They encouraged people to come on in, the water's fine. Go out. There's nothing to worry about. We don't have any cases here. That's a New York sort of thing. That's a California kind of problem. They are complaining that the White House did not issue them stern enough warnings. Leadership is not looking to someone else to make the tough decisions for you. It's just not. That is, in fact, the antithesis of leadership. That is followership. Somebody should tell me what I should do. That's nuts. But that's what the Democrats are doing. The Democratic mayor of New Orleans, the Democratic governor of Louisiana. The fact is, they knew the risks. They knew the warnings. They chose to ignore them. Why? Not because they're evil people, I don't think. I don't know them, but it doesn't seem likely that they're evil people. It's because the city and the state make a boatload of money off of Mardi Gras. If you cancel Mardi Gras in New Orleans, their budgets on the state and local level are going to take a major hit. They don't want to take that hit. They don't want to absorb. They probably made a calculation, because the President of the United States can't shut down Mardi Gras. The President of the United States has no authority to shut down Mardi Gras. The mayor and the governor do. So if the president had ordered it shut down somehow, they would have thrown an absolute fit. If the president had called them up and said, hey, don't do this, they would have thrown a fit and said, we're not going to let that racist POS tell me what to do. This is a tradition, and besides, we don't have any cases. The left talked nonstop about how Donald Trump was a tyrant. And when it comes to exposing how they've screwed up significantly. It is, well, Donald Trump wasn't a big enough tyrant. Donald Trump should have been a tyrant and told us what to do. That's not the way the world works. That's not the way government in the United States works. The federal government does not dictate these sorts of things to state and local officials. Frankly, the federal government has enough on its plate that it doesn't have to worry about event planning in American cities. That's why there are elected officials in those cities and in those states. They're supposed to step up to the plate. But LaToya Cantrell and John Bell Edwards, no, they realize that the feces hit the fan in their state and in their city because of their failure to lead. So they just rewrote the whole damn thing. They just pretended that the president should have been the one who told them what to do. They would have thrown an absolute fit. There's a couple of things I want to get to before we get to the interview. We cover a lot of ground in the interview. But I want to talk about Dr. Fauci, because that's the screaming headline everywhere. Fauci says 100,000 to 200,000 dead in the United States. This is going to be Armageddon. It could be that high. He was citing worst case scenario estimates in computer models, which to this point have proven to be woefully inaccurate already. Right now, there are 137,294 cases diagnosed in the U.S. and 2,414 deaths. That is a very, very low death rate. But if you recognize the reality on the ground, and I've been getting a lot of emails from listeners lately, both to this podcast and to my radio show, about how they swore they had this thing. They had the worst flu they've ever had. They went through absolute hell. And I personally know two people who, before coronavirus came along, this was at least in the forefront of the news in January, who were on their asses for 2 weeks with the flu, complaining on social media, complaining on phone calls that I had with them about how, God, I just can't shake this. This is terrible. I don't know what the hell is. This is the worst flu I've ever had. So the odds of the at least confirmed cases number is low, is incredibly, incredibly high. 137,000 people, probably could be as high as 500,000, could be over 1 million by this point. Who knows? I've heard from doctors. I've heard from nurses who've said, we had people come into the hospital and, you know, for flu puts people on their ass. Flu is a very, very dangerous thing. Flu, people come into the emergency room for the flu, and we tested them for the flu, and they didn't have the flu. They tested for flu A and flu B, the two most prevalent strains of flu this year, because there are a bunch of strains of the flu, and which one it's going to be, they sort of guess, and then they have the vaccine for that one, and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. So some years, the flu vaccine works and nails it, and sometimes the flu vaccine doesn't work because they picked the wrong strain. There's no exact science to this. But these people are telling me that they had people that come in and they tested them, and they had no flu. They didn't know what it was. They just treated it as an unknown respiratory infection and treated them. Most of those people, I would assume, recovered, because you didn't hear about a massive uptick in mysterious deaths in American hospitals. So the number of infected is most definitely higher. By the way, that's the number of infected. Remember, we're only testing people who exhibit signs, symptoms of coronavirus, and a couple of symptoms. It can't just be, I've got a cough. It can be, you know, I have a cough, I have a fever, I have a this, I have a that. Whatever the symptoms are, they seem to manifest themselves differently in different people. Some people have a giant spiking fever, other people don't, for example. So the odds of there being significantly more cases in the United States are about as high as you can get, about 100%, which would mean that the deaths, the total deaths number, now standing at 2,414 as of this recording, are undercounted as well, because there will be some people who came to the hospital, came to the emergency room before coronavirus testing existed in this country, and they will have died from it, no question. And it will just be probably reported as a fatality due to an unknown respiratory infection, whatever. But it also means that our death rate is much lower because, as I said, there wasn't a massive spike in unknown deaths in hospitals across the country from respiratory failure, from an unknown viral infection of the lungs. There's nothing reported like that. After the fact, we'll know. After the fact, once they get a handle on this thing, then they will do testing to find out how many people have the antibodies, meaning they already had it and their body fought it off. It's a simple fact of nature and an unfortunate twist of fate that we all have varying degrees of immune systems. Some work beautifully and can fend off almost anything, whereas other people are susceptible to just about anything. Somebody sneezes in their zip code and they run risk of getting pneumonia. That's just the way of life, one of the unfair things about life in general. So keep in mind, our death rate is incredibly low. Our death rate, our actual death rate of people infected, which is a more important number to keep track of, is likely significantly lower. Doesn't mean don't take it seriously, because you can still be a spreader, even if you don't exhibit symptoms. And that's kind of the problem. You have to act like the people you love's life depends on it, even if you don't think your life depends on it. Because if you go out and recklessly endanger yourself, fine. I'd have no problem with that. The problem is you got 14 days after you go out to recklessly infect and endanger the lives of other people who didn't go out, who behaved themselves, who did what they were supposed to do. If you can live with that guilt, then you can live with that guilt. I would suggest that there's something wrong with you. But hey, that's just me. I don't like the idea of killing people. You know, I'm old-fashioned that way. But I have heard from people like, this isn't stopping me. I'm not going anywhere. Apparently, there are some mega churches in the country where people still go to these things. And I just think these people are I'll just say it. These people are fucking morons. Oh, no. Freedom of religion. You got to be able. You can. You can go do it all you want. There is no law stopping you from being incredibly stupid. But again, this isn't a decision you're just making for yourself. It's a decision you're making for everybody you're going to meet, should you have the misfortune of coming down with this thing. That's where the difference is. And if you are a very religious person, I would think that you would have a problem with that. Call me crazy, call me old-fashioned, but I would think that might eat at you. And recklessly endangering the lives of other people, I again would suspect, is something that God does not look particularly favorably on. Well, we got to go to church, religious freedom. If you read the Bible, and I'm going to paraphrase here, so because I'm no theologian, but it says something about wherever two or more of you gather, I shall be there, which means that you don't have to go to church to worship God. You can actually pray alone and be just fine, because God is always with you. And it's not, it always drives me nuts. Well, these are houses of worship. This is God's house. We must, God doesn't have walls. Okay, God doesn't live in these buildings across the country and around the world. It always kind of bothered me that, you know, these holy sites, and every religion has their holy sites. And it's like, God is everywhere. I don't think that God just hangs out in these specific areas. Otherwise, you just build a church, boom, there's God's living in there. No, God is everywhere. You don't have to go to these places, especially right now, and endanger your life and the lives of others. Act responsibly. God knows what's going on. God will understand. So, yeah, I see this stuff and I think, what is wrong with people? I see the beaches of Florida still having lots of people on them. Oh, the pictures. Oh, we're 6 feet apart. We're just hanging out on the beach. Okay, you got groups of people 6 feet apart. What happens when you want to go to the water? Okay. If you've got a line of people playing the Red Rover game set up on their blankets 6 feet apart, and you want to go skipping through five rows of them to get to the water, guess what? You're walking within, if you're perfectly cutting in half, you're going to spend a little bit of time not 6 feet away from people, but 3 feet away from people. It's not where you plant your ass as much as it is where you plant your seat. Think about it. Just think rationally. Yes, the water's pretty. The ocean is great. And I'm sure it's warm and wonderful to be out there on the ocean in Florida. But it's going to be there when this is done. You don't need to go today. I get that you're bored. Find some way to be creative. Find some way to distract yourself. And if you simply cannot control yourself, then resign yourself to riding it out at home alone if you do have the misfortune of being sick. You're not just risking your own health. You're free to do that. I couldn't care less what you do with your own life and your own health. You're risking the life and the health of other people, not just the other people on the beach. Again, not a lot of sympathy for morons like that. It's the medical professionals who will have to treat your dumb ass if you choose to go, I don't need this, doesn't worry, I never get sick, I'm going. Or it's your kids, or your parents, or your spouse, or your neighbors, all of these people. If you want to live with the guilt of what you could do, if you're comfortable with that, then knock yourself out. I would suggest keeping other people away from you and animals and anything else. And I would suspect that you might be a little bit sociopathic if you don't care about the destruction of human lives in your wake and the cost that you run risk of imposing on the system. But you ever notice all these people are like, I'm going where I want to go. And they always go someplace like a beach. They always go someplace like a park. They go someplace where there's like a party. They go to, there's dinner parties, secret dinner parties and secret speakeasies in New York City because they don't have enough problems. Nobody's ever sneaking off to go to work. You ever notice that? I can't sit around my house all day. Well, work. Go to work then. How about you go to work? No. No, I'm not going to do that. I just want to go out and get drunk and maybe get laid. That's it. I'm perfectly content to sit on my ass and take advantage of this. But I'm not doing the things that are necessitating this social distancing. That's why these people make me sick. Again, you want to harm yourself? I couldn't care less. Stay home and play with knives or something. It's when it comes to harming other people that I have the problem. The president has now extended the restrictions and warnings and everything until the end of April. So day 45 or something like that, things are going to get real weird. It's going to be weird to try and readjust. I don't think I'm going to play any audio today. I just want to get to this interview, but a couple of things I want to point out before we get to that still. The Washington Free Beacon has this story. Now, remember, Nancy Pelosi held up the coronavirus relief bill and inserted a bunch of little perks and lovely little big chunks of change for her constituency groups. And one of them was the Kennedy Center. Remember that? Instead of getting $35 million, they got $25 million. Now, it turns out that Valerie Jarrett, Barack Obama's brain, is on the board of the Kennedy Center. So you begin to see why Nancy was so interested in making sure that the Kennedy Center got money at the expense of fighting coronavirus. But now the Washington Free Beacon reports that they're laying off their musicians and their orchestra. They report the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts informed members of the National Symphony Orchestra that they would no longer be paid just hours after President Trump signed a $25 million taxpayer bailout for the Cultural Center, according to an email obtained by the Washington Free Beacon. Nearly 100 musicians will no longer receive paychecks after April 3rd, according to an email from the orchestra's COVID-19 Advisory Committee. What was the money for? The quote, this is the email. The COVID-19 Advisory Committee was broadsided today during our conversation with Kennedy Center President David Rutter. The email says, Ms. Rutter abruptly informed us that the last paycheck for all musicians and librarians will be April 3rd and that we will not be paid again until the center reopens. The email went out to members on Friday evening, shortly after President Trump signed the $2.2 trillion CARES Act, a stimulus package intended to provide relief to people left unemployed by the coronavirus pandemic. Congress included $25 million in taxpayer funding for the Kennedy Center, a provision that raised eyebrows for both Democrats and Republicans, but ultimately won support from President Trump. The bailout was designed to, quote, cover operating expenses required to ensure the continuity of JFK's Center for the Performing Arts and its affiliates, including for employee compensation and benefits, grants, contracts, payment for rent or utilities, fees, or artists or performers, according to the law's text. The organization decided that the relief did not extend to members of the National Symphony Orchestra, its house orchestra. Now, isn't that lovely? $25 million set on fire, wasting our time, wasting our money. I'm sure that the bigwigs, the muckety-mucks, whatever they're getting over there at the Kennedy Center, those checks will keep on rolling. But for the lowly musicians, no, screw them. Those are probably the only people they could legally let go. So they did, because why not? To do it on the same day is what's funny. The Kennedy Center just completed a $250 million renovation. So they have money. They've been spending money. They have priorities, and they're not about to let a little thing like a national or worldwide emergency change that at all. Disgusting, like I said. Not surprising in the least. And finally today, the update. This is kind of funny. The president has, it turns out, remember, what's her face? Harry, Prince Harry, and his wife, Meghan Markle. They moved to Canada. Now they don't want to move to Canada. They want to move to the United States. They want to move to L.A. because she wants to be a big Hollywood muckety-muck. And they're apparently asking the federal government for help in providing security, right? The United States somehow. The Washington Examiner has the story. After British royalty and global celebrities Prince Harry and Meghan Markle pulled a last-minute move from Canada to Los Angeles this week, the question emerged as to who would pay their whopping $25 million in security costs, which Canada refused to do. Because the royal pair are stepping down from their official duties as members of the royal family, they will no longer qualify automatically for U.S. protection, according to the UK Daily Mail. It's a courtesy. the president or somebody who's under Secret Service protection goes over there, the Brits sort of offer supplementary protections. Well, no. President of the United States says, no, we will not be offering them security. The president actually tweeted, I am a great friend and admirer of the Queen and the United Kingdom. It was reported that Harry and Meghan, who left the kingdom, would reside permanently in Canada. Now they have left Canada for the U.S. However, the U.S. will not pay for their security protection. They must pay. Yeah, well, maybe they could have taken some of that money from the Kennedy Center and spread it around to them. Instead, well, who knows? Democrats might have gone that route. But you got to love this. I like that he's saying no. They don't want to be a part of the royal family. That's fine. You don't get to get to all the perks that come with a royal family. That family's rich either way. They can pony up or get to work or learn to deal with less. Those are all ideas I would float to them. Because you aren't special, people. I'm sorry. You just aren't. Anyway, let's get to the interview with the Attorney General of Louisiana and find out what's going on down there. Attorney General Jeff Landry. Never met the guy before. Good conversation. I think you'll enjoy it. But first, a little hat tip to our sponsor, CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. I am taking this stuff every day. My back has been sore, and this stuff really helps. In addition to my knee problems and my eye strain, CBD oil really is kind of a bit of a miracle. But don't take my word for it. Just search CBD oil benefits, see what comes up, read some reviews, read some statements, read some testimonials, talk to your friends. You got nothing but time now to talk to your friends and family. Find out who's on it and what they think of it, and then go, wait a second, I got to give this stuff a try. Then when you do that, when you reach that point, you go to ancientlifeoil.com, all one word, ancientlifeoil.com, and check out 100% organic, the purest CBD oil you can find out there. It's not full of THC. It's not going to get you high, but it will make a difference in your relaxation, in your stress release, in your pain relief. It will make a huge difference. They have a bunch of different flavors. In fact, at ancientlifeoil.com, they have a ton of different products to help you out. And then at checkout, if you enter the promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, click apply, you get free shipping on top of it. They're having a great sale right now. Coupled with free shipping, comes right to your home, and you too can check out the benefits of CBD oil. Thanks to them. Don't forget promo code Derek and click apply. Let's go now to our chat with Attorney General of the State of Louisiana, Jeff Landry.
As we've been doing throughout this entire ordeal, we talk to people around the country, get their sense of what's going on in their states. We've talked to Bo Snerdly from the Rush Limbaugh Show. We've talked to Sean Parnell up in Pennsylvania to find out what's going on in Western Pennsylvania. There's never been a more prescient guest than we have today. It's the Attorney General of the State of Louisiana, Jeff Landry. And we are expecting all the reports, all the doctors are saying that what's happening in New York is soon going to be happening in Louisiana. So we want to, first of all, send our thoughts and prayers to them, Mr. Attorney General, to all of you down there, and get a sense of preparedness and the feel on the ground right now. So thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me.
You have about 3,500 cases right now in the state of Louisiana. You're taking precautions at this point. Before we get into any specifics, what's the sense? What's the feel of the people down there?
You know, I think as the stay home order worked its way into the communities around the state, I think you're starting to see people pay more and more attention to it and practice more and more social distancing. I went out yesterday and just kind of drove around and noticed that traffic was down tremendously, especially for a Saturday in the town that I live in. And you're seeing it more and more. Like I said, I think people are starting to recognize that this is a serious issue. It is a troubling pandemic, and it has consequences for people in the vulnerable population.
You've, as every, you issued a statement regarding price gouging, And there's a problem with price gouging. There's a problem with hoarding, particularly of crucial, critical medical supplies. As you guys have more of a telegraphing of this punch coming your way, is that becoming a bigger and bigger problem down there? Are people, you know, taking care of themselves first and things that aren't necessarily necessary?
Yeah, right now, since it began, we've had a total of 203 price gouging complaints. We've closed out about 134 of the 203. You know, what I'll tell you is that the hoarding, which you alluded to in your question as well, I think is to some extent a bigger problem, and it's kind of compounding the price gouging issue. You know, price gouging, for us to actually enforce price gouging, it's a subjective test, and the law is really unclear. There's a tremendous amount of factual evidence that we need in order to actually charge someone or to go after them civilly. But what we do see is that a restriction in supply. You know, it was like the run we had on toilet paper, right? I mean, if we had some law, I'm thinking that the legislatures around the state, around the country, should basically be discussing after this is over with hoarding laws, right? So that we ensure that the supply of needed items is going to be there. And of course, if you do that, I think that'll also help on the pricing side as well.
That's one of the things. There isn't a shortage of crucial things. There is, people are buying more. It's a demand thing much more than a supply thing. We're making the same amount of toilet paper we've always made, or probably ramped it up a little bit now. So when this is over, I think that there's going to be a bit of a reckoning, in the sense that the toilet paper industry is not going to sell anything for a while. People have a year's worth of toilet paper in their homes. When I don't know how you feel about this, or maybe there's something you can say that can help calm people down, but that mentality of I must buy, it's here, I must buy all I possibly can. Grocery stores are still open. The supply chain is still rolling. Manufacture is still happening. And is there a way to reach people and make them? Because I wrote a book about media manipulation, and I still fall prey to it. I know how it works. You watch one story and you think, oh, things are going pretty good. And then you watch another story and you think, oh my God, we're all going to die right now. The truth is always somewhere in between. But is there any way to reach people that you can think of that would make them feel better, that isn't unrealistic?
Yeah, I mean, look, what we're saying here in Louisiana is to basically continue shopping, but shop for a week, not for a month, right? The supply chain seems to be intact at this time. We have no reason to believe that it's going to be a problem. What's important is that we have to remain vigilant, and not to panic. And I think that's the problem. The problem is the panic out there. And the way that we do it is basically what me and you are doing today, is putting out good, solid, factual information for the general public to consume. What's happening out there, unfortunately, is that there's a lot of information, whether it's in other journalism sources that are trying to bend or basically, hype up a particular story. We had a story here in Louisiana where we had one of our major papers basically put a big story out that a young lady, 30 years old, had collapsed in her apartment and died while waiting for the test. She had been tested for COVID-19, and they hyped it up, only to find out 3 days later that the test was negative, and she didn't even die of the disease and of the virus. And so those are the kind of things that we need to make sure that you and I put out good factual information. People know that there's not a run on toilet paper, like you said. However, you know, I want to go back to something you said earlier. There is a shortage of medical supplies, right? Because of the demand, because of that supply chain is actually overseas. A lot of those medical supply devices or that equipment is manufactured in Asia and, of course, takes some time to get to the United States. So there is a shortage there, but on basic necessities that we need to be able to basically self-quarantine at home, no shortage.
One of the things that this necessity is the mother of invention, of course, it'd be better to have a different type of necessity, but we're seeing around the country. On Friday's show, I talked with Mike Lindell from MyPillow, who has converted 75% of his manufacturing to making masks. Is there, and you see businesses that don't normally do certain things now, you know, hours for the elderly. You can reserve a half an hour in a bookstore, for example, by yourself if you want to go out there. Are you seeing innovation like that throughout Louisiana, where as businesses struggle in this time, finding new and creative ways to retain some level of normalcy?
Absolutely. I mean, look, the greatness about America is we're free thinkers, right? Because we're an independent bunch of folks. And yes, you're going to see that. You know, one of the things that hit me, and it was a week ago, and I'm glad to see the type of intervention that you were talking about at the MyPillow factory, is, you know, I grew up in a textile town here in Louisiana that actually was relocated down to South America after the NAFTA agreement in the 90s and basically crushed the town. And what struck me is that, look, back then it was a Fruit of the Loom plant, right? And so the same material that you would use to make the surgical mask, you could basically make, or could have made, in that textile facility as well. And so it's great to see factories in the United States retooling and recognizing that we have a weakness or a weak link in our supply chain. And guess what? We're going to take care of it here in the homeland.
You had a situation down there with an abortion clinic that is refusing to close down, refusing to follow the guidance from the government. Talk a little bit about that. The argument they're making is it's crucial care that they need to stay open. We're seeing similar arguments in other states around the country where medical supplies, abortion is an elective procedure. Those clinics have medical supplies, masks, gowns, gloves, things like that, that are crucial to keeping people alive elsewhere. And they're fighting tooth and nail, in one degree, I suppose I can understand it, but they're fighting tooth and nail to stay open and sort of keep their own supply from the frontline first responders.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's a typical theme in the abortion industry that they believe they're above everything and above the law, right? What we're telling them in Louisiana is that, hey, listen, there is no exception for abortion clinics. We're not treating them different in Louisiana than we are any other clinics. All the other clinics are closing. All the other clinics are doing their part to ensure that the supply chain, when it comes to medical equipment and protective apparatuses, are providing and going to the front lines of fighting this virus. The abortion clinic should be ashamed of them in the actions that they're taking. And we have sent a message to the Louisiana Department of Health, which is in charge of these types of clinics, and saying, hey, listen, we will help you to ensure that these clinics close.
Are the courts functioning down there right now, that this order could be enforced? I mean, I don't understand or know exactly the situation there. Out here, they're functioning, but the skeleton crew. Is there a way to take defensive or proactive legal action in Louisiana that is efficient at this moment?
Yeah, I mean, we could. I mean, look, you're right. The courts are working in a limited capacity right now. You know, my hat's off and a great shout out goes out to our Supreme Court justices who have worked extremely hard here in Louisiana to basically thread that particular needle and pass down good guidance to the lower courts so that we stay open, so that our criminal justice system continues to operate, so that our communities remain safe. So, yeah, there are some things that we absolutely can do. The sad part is that those in the clinics are only taking away resources and time that the rest of us have in trying to combat the virus, for us to have to go deal with them in what should be a common sense, responsible action.
Are there other industries or entities that are being bad actors in this time of need?
Other than them, I can't say there is. I mean, look, you know, one of the things I think we pride ourselves, certainly in Louisiana, we're a hardworking lot. And everyone out there is doing their part, like I said, to basically respect the social distancing, to ensure that the supply chain is open. You know, again, a shout out goes out to all the truck drivers out there who are keeping the grocery shelves and the supply chain open so that we have the things we need in order to self-quarantine. of course, you know, a shout out to the doctors and to the nurses and to the paramedics that are out there on the front line. So really and truly, I think things, for the most part, are working out well here in Louisiana. We've got a tough road ahead of us. The next 2 to 3 weeks are going to be bad for us here in the state. New Orleans seemed to be kind of a ground zero area for our state. You know, we can contribute that probably to Mardi Gras. We've got a tough task, but I think everyone's up to making sure that we fight this invisible enemy and that we win.
Let's talk about New Orleans and Mardi Gras for a second. Mayor LaToya Cantrell was on television the other day talking about how she had no idea that there was this problem. She hadn't gotten any guidance. She definitely would have led had somebody from Washington told her to lead and shut down Mardi Gras. You're there, you're in the state. New Orleans obviously dominates the state in the news as the biggest city there. Was it a mystery what was going on in the rest of the world before Mardi Gras?
As far as I can tell, all of the news media outlets that we watch and the internet was certainly up and running through January and February in New Orleans. So I do believe the mayor was getting unused like everyone else. I would remind you that the mayor is part of the same political party that criticized the president for closing travel from Asia into the United States and basically said that he was taking premature action and basically calling him a racist for doing so. And again, what we found, though, was that the action that he actually took was responsible. But again, I would remind you that that was the same group that was calling and crying foul when responsible elected officials were actually taking actions.
Is there anything that Louisiana needs? Is there anything right now that you guys are desperately scrambling for? I imagine everybody's involved in, I imagine there are conference calls on a regular basis with all the relevant authorities, the governor, the mayors, the suppliers, things like that. What is there a critical shortage of? And how much have you learned from New York's experience, watching New York's experience in preparation for what they say, hopefully it won't happen, fingers crossed it won't, but what they say is coming your way?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the sad part is the need here in Louisiana is basically the need that you see in all of the hotspots around the country, right? We certainly will, you know, depending upon whether or not we can flatten that curve out or not, need ventilators, right? The more ventilators we could have in some of the critical areas such as New Orleans, the better off we'll be. PPE, you know, the protective gear and equipment is absolutely in short supply. The K95 masks, of course, are in short supply. We hear that again and again and again. I have nurses that would call me and say, you know, we don't have all of the PPE that we need. And, you know, what should we do? And I'm like, well, you keep doing what you're doing right now because some and having it is better than nothing. Until we can fix that supply chain, until we can get more manufacturing capacity here on the homeland, we're just going to have that problem.
One of the things we've seen around the country is, as this spread, the waiving of federal regulations, the waiving of state regulations and local laws regarding like delivery of alcohol along with food, things like that. It's not really a problem in New Orleans. But in Louisiana, have there been things that I assume the governor would call you up and say, I need to waive this regulation. How do we do this? We need to bypass this law because it's an emergency need. Have there been things where the government is putting unnecessary regulations and such to the side?
I haven't seen. We got a couple of instances under which they actually created a regulation, the emergency rule, that became more problematic than before. But that was one example that I can think of. For the most part, we seem to be doing the same thing, which is cutting the regulations and cutting the rules out there so that the economy can move and that people can act in a much more efficient, effective manner. We did a lot of great things. Louisiana is unique. Of course, the number of natural disasters that we consistently have had over the last decades, we've got a lot of great laws on the books that deal with immunity, protecting people in these conditions from, you know, lawyers suing them after the fact. The governor has a tremendous amount of power to waive just on his own through executive order rules and regulations. The legislature under the Constitution has the ability to suspend laws for a time period. And so we've got some good arrows in the quiver in order to handle this. And, you know, like I said, for the most part, I think we're doing a fair job.
You mentioned the natural disasters you guys have had. Katrina, of course, being the most notable. It's a major city on the sea, below sea level. It's completely different. But what did you, what was helpful from the natural disasters you guys have faced to this pandemic?
Well, I think, you know, one thing, it's interesting. I've had that discussion with many of our emergency preparedness offices out there. And it is fundamentally different, right? These pandemics are absolutely fundamentally different than natural disasters. However, the key components out there, like I said, being able to have government function during a time of chaos, right? I guess the one underlying common factor is the chaos that, that ensures throughout the public. And it's just a disruption of normal and everyday life. You know, the good news, I guess, if you look for the positives, in this type of pandemic is that the infrastructure is in place, right? Our roads are still passable. Electricity is still on. We have clean water. Our supply chain is working. Now, on the flip side, you know, we're dealing with trying to ensure that the healthcare system can adequately cover the number of patients that are coming in. And that's the challenge.
How are you guys handling that? Are you creating new hospitals, these sort of pop-up hospitals, as they say, working with the Army Corps of Engineers? Or how close to capacity are you guys? I mean, it's a game where you want to keep it at bay. Are you guys staying far enough ahead of that wave, do you feel, at this point?
Well, we, you know, of course, that's the, you know, no one has a crystal ball, but that's kind of where we think we are. I know right now down in New Orleans, they are building additional extra temporary capacity for hospitals and medical care. And of course, New Orleans is kind of the epicenter of the outbreak here in Louisiana. We don't know. We're moving as fast as we possibly can. I know that we're still in short supply of ventilators, or we anticipate that if we don't get more, we certainly will have a shortage. And so, you know, again, if we're able to get those in, those supplies in, and if our peak comes in later, like the later it is in the month of April, or even if the peak doesn't happen until May, the better off we'll be.
How have you found working with federal authorities? And I assume other states are coordinating with one another as well. This is probably the most cooperative governments have ever been with one another. They tend to, you know, butt heads against each other as far as who has control, who has the rights and things like that. This is one time everybody's pulling in the same direction. But is, are the lines of communication open? Are, if you need something, how free are you guys and confident in being able to call somebody and get, not obviously the crucial things, but general things or advice? Is there a communication set up that is very satisfactory between the federal and the states?
Yeah, I got to tell you, you know, my hat's off and a big shout out to the White House, the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, Doug Hozier, William Crozier, and them have been absolutely wonderful in ensuring that we have conference calls after conference calls where, like, we've had AG-only conference calls where every attorney general in the country gets an opportunity to go on a conference call. They actually put people from the CDC, the Surgeon General, on those particular conference calls, allow us to actually ask questions, and there is some dialogue back and forth. You know, I got to tell you, the administration has been superb. And again, I think the key is what you hit on earlier. It's communication, the ability to push up questions and then to get responses. Now, of course, sometimes we don't get the response as quickly as we would like it, but for the most part, I think everything's being responded to in a pretty orderly and efficient manner.
How do you do the job of Attorney General, the chief law enforcement officer in the state, when you can't meet with anybody? You can't go any. I mean, it's a weird situation where I imagine on a daily basis you have a fairly large staff. They're in and out of your office. You're in and out of your office, in and out of different meetings and courthouses and whatnot. That's all cut off now. What? How does the rule of law continue to? Not that it isn't. I'm not saying it isn't, but I'm just curious how you find the mechanics of conducting the enforcement of the law from an office in your home, I assume, or someplace where you can't really leave?
Well, you know, one of the things that we did during my last administration, because I just got reelected last year, was one of the things we did when I first got into office was try to bring the office into the IT world. And so over the last 4 years, we have done a great job of being able to administer laptops and cell phones and VPNs to all our staff members and certainly all our crucial staff and essential staff at the Department of Justice here in Louisiana. Of course, for those bright lawyers that we have in the office that are converted, they're actually liking it, right? And so, but some of the more social ones, it's a little bit, unnerving. All in all, we have done a great job. Our directors, I talked to each one of the directors at least once or twice during the week. I've had a number of conference calls. I had one this morning, you know, and it kind of comes in flurries, right? The governor will take a particular action. There'll be a response from other elected officials trying to understand that. We try to kind of mend the two or kind of give them some guidance as to what exactly is happening. So for the most part, we haven't had a problem. We really haven't. And we're in constant contact with the court as well.
As far as the criminal justice aspect of it, there's a crime problem in Louisiana, like there are crime problems everywhere, and in New Orleans, like there are in major cities everywhere. Some jurisdictions are releasing people from prison, mostly nonviolent. Some are making mistakes. Crime still does happen. First of all, are you guys considering releasing people from prison in the midst of this? And secondly, what about people? Is the response time from police changed at all? Are the police still, are they prioritizing certain things? Somebody, you know, smashes your car window and you call into the police, you say, sorry, we'll get there eventually, but we can't really do anything. There are other more pressing issues. Like, talk about law enforcement, first of all, the prisoners, and then the actual enforcing of the laws during a time of a pandemic and sort of self-quarantine.
Well, I can probably speak for everybody except New Orleans. New Orleans seems to be a special place when it comes to that type of enforcement. But I can tell you, everywhere else, enforcement has not changed. In fact, I talk to sheriffs on a pretty daily basis. I am not for, nor are they, nor are the district attorneys, or would be the equivalent to everyone else, county prosecutors. Here we have parishes. None of them are for any releasing of prisoners or shortening their sentences. I don't know that anyone has been able to convince me that those that are in jail are safer on the streets in New Orleans than they are in the jails. I know that the sheriffs have put in place protocols that they believe can adequately handle any outbreak that they would have in a particular facility. And so I feel comfortable, and I'm hopeful that the governor's not going to take that kind of action where we start just trying to release people because of some leftist or liberal policy that they've been wanting to have. I think it's problematic. I think it only puts a further strain on our first responders who right now are working overtime to protect themselves and the community as a whole.
You're a Republican, your governor is a Democrat, albeit a somewhat conservative Democrat. Has that been a factor at all in your communication with him during this thing? Is there traditional party headbuttings that have happened that or is it now just it doesn't matter? We're all Louisianans.
No, look, I think it's been over a week now. Him and I did a press conference together with Coach Orgeron, the LSU head coach, and where, you know, I said to everyone in Louisiana that the governor and I are going to stand shoulder to shoulder in this. Him and I have probably spoken more during this crisis than we have over the last 5 years. And so, you know, I think we've got a pretty good open line of communication. This is about working to get everyone through this safely, trying to protect as many people as we can, and hope that the vulnerable population that's out there, we can minimize the deaths here in Louisiana. So, you know, where I stand today is the same place I stood a week or so ago, in that I'm willing to work with anyone, irrespective of their political party or their ideology, in order to make sure that we keep everyone safe.
As we wrap up here, Mr. Attorney General, are the people of Louisiana taking this as seriously as you'd like, or are they following the? We see people in Florida still going to the beaches. We see people in New York throwing potluck dinners for, you know, screw coronavirus, let's have a potluck dinner. There are always some people who don't take it seriously, but on the whole, you guys, again, I imagine the motivator is everybody's talking about what's coming your way, specifically New Orleans. So are the people stepping up?
Yeah, I think for the most part they are. You know, I did a radio show the other day with a caller who was complaining about the social distancing that some people are not respecting inside of grocery stores. At the end of the day, the government and neither you or I can fix stupid, right? And so what we try to do is again, continue to educate the public. We try to educate them and make sure that they understand, listen, if you're not feeling good, if you are sick, don't go out. You know, try to distance yourself. You know, spend some time. We want people to spend time outside, right? When the weather's nice, you want to spend as much time as you can outside. But again, you want to respect the distance that you are between people. Think about what you're doing, Washington. You know, the general, public sanitation rules that are out there and in place are the guidance. But I think for the most part, Louisianians are doing their part.
Lastly, Attorney General Landry, I just ask you what message you have for the country. It's a lot like a tsunami warning. That's where New Orleans, that's where Louisiana finds itself. There's been an earthquake off in the middle of the ocean. We don't know for sure that a tsunami's coming, but you have to prepare for it. We're all going through this tsunami in a certain way, one way or the other, but they're telling us you're going to be the epicenter of it. What can you say to the country, and what can we do for you?
Well, you know, one of the first things I would tell everyone is, look, remember, be safe, be vigilant, but don't be fearful and panic, right? I think sometimes the panic can actually exacerbate an already bad problem that we have. I think it takes common sense, and I think that the guidance that's been put out by both the federal government and the state governments are sound. If we social distance, if we continue to wash our hands, if we continue to limit the interaction that we have with one another, we will be able to flatten this curve out, and our healthcare system, which is one of the greatest in the world, I might add, will be able to handle it. You know, I tell people the message is, listen, this virus is not something the American healthcare system can't handle. It just can't be overloaded. And if we recognize that and respect that, we'll get through it.
I tell you about the hand washing. I'm feeling my knuckles right now. I feel like I've been prepping for surgery. I've never used lotion before, but I had to grab my wife's lotion because my hands are so scrubbed down. Every time I go outside, we have two small kids. So I basically set all my clothes on fire every time I step in the backyard so they don't even come back into the house. It's a little bit of paranoia goes a long way, but calm along with it is the difference maker. Attorney General of the State of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, thank you so much for taking the time today. And good luck and Godspeed. God bless.
Stay safe.
Stay safe indeed. Thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it. Thank you for subscribing and spreading the word on social media. Who will we have on the show tomorrow? Anybody? I don't know. We'll have to find out. This is all flying by the seat of our pants. This is a whole new world we're in, ladies and gentlemen. This coronavirus quarantine thing has really messed up a lot of things, and we'll be here to give you perspectives from around the country and my own as well. I look forward to the day when we can return to normal programming, but there's nothing normal about right now till it becomes the new normal. Then we know we've been doing it too long. Don't go stir crazy. Go out for a walk, go out for a drive, and be back here tomorrow for another exciting episode. Thanks again for listening. See you tomorrow.